Our reading this morning is from the 13th chapter of the book of Hebrews. Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember those who are in prison as though you were in prison with them. Those who are being tortured as though you yourselves were being tortured. Let love be held in honor by all, and let the marriage bed be kept undefiled, for God will judge fornicators and adulterers. Keep your lives free from the love of money, and be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you or forsake you. So you can say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can anyone do to me? Remember your leaders, those who spoke the word of God to you. Consider the outcome of their way of life and imitate their faith. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Through him, then, let us continually offer a sacrifice of praise to God that is the fruit of the lips that confess his name. Do not neglect to do good and to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God. And the next verse, which is not part of the reading, is, obey your leaders and submit to them. We're going to stop there. You don't have to submit to me. Measurement may not sound like a topic needing a whole lot of study, but some scientists do exactly that. Those who are called metrologists, from the Greek word metron, which means measure, and their work is important. For example, some metrologists in the National Institute of Standards and Technologies, that's the NIST, I'm sure that's a federal agency you're all familiar with, not. That's in the Department of Commerce. That's a good place for it. Its mission is to promote U.S. innovation and industrial competitiveness by advancing the measurement science, or the science of measurement, of standards and technology in ways that enhance the economic security and improve the quality of our life. Isn't that nice to know our government is concerned about the quality of our life? Yep, we got it. So what do metrologists do to mark the landmark step in the field of their study? Some of them got a tattoo. Now, you were saying, what happened in the world of measurement that warranted someone to get a tattoo? That's what at least six researchers did last year after a vote in Versailles, France, where representatives from the United States and 59 other nations voted to change the definition of a kilogram. The other three units of measurement, the ampere, the kevlon, and the mole, from existing standards or definitions of what they call fundamental constants of nature. I'm glad somebody thinks there's something constant in nature. In the case of the kilogram, the unit of mass, the standard is no longer a physical cylinder known as Le Grand K, which is stored in a vault outside of Paris. And unless you're into measurements and all that stuff, you would have never heard of Le Grand K. But it was the standard for a kilogram. It's now defined in terms of a Planck constant, an unvarying infinitesimal number at the very heart of quantum physics. If you don't understand that, no worries, I don't either. Only a few few of us really understand what that's about. But the metrologists consider that an earth-moving change had happened since the Levon Gay, as a physical object, was subject to something called variance. In 2007, for example, after being the standard for a kilogram for 118 years, Legrand K was found that it lost approximately 50 micrograms. Just sitting in a vault, it lost weight. Now, I'm interested in that, but the people who are concerned that the measurements are precise panicked. This thing that was supposed to be the standard, sitting alone in a vault, lost weight. This standard that they've come up with now, the Planck constant, is immutable. It's unchanging. It's mathematical. Some are calling these revisions the most important changes in International Bureau of Weights and Measures made in the last 100 years. And that's why those 6 metrological workers got their themed tattoos. There's a picture of them posted, smiling, and all of them showing their tattoo arms extended and looking slightly silly because they're wearing gauzy net hats that are required for their work. It's about as exciting as you're going to get with metrologists, David Newell said. The photograph included in the NBC News article in Engadget of November 16th. I mean, there's an actual periodical called Engadget. This got me off into a strange world working on this sermon. What does all this mean in daily life for you and me as average people? Not much. The kilogram is still roughly the equivalent of 2.2 pounds. Its redefinition in science, in the stream life of scientific research and development, when it involves the precise measurement of mass, it becomes very important. Now, I've taken you down this rabbit hole, not because of any noticeable effect on our lives, but because in areas we do care about, especially in religion, we sometimes get tangled up over arguments over what part of our faith is unchangeable versus the parts that are tied to cultural practices of biblical times, and that fight can go on for a long time. The epistle reading today gives us the opportunity to think about this, especially as it declares Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. The same. I'm not the same as I was yesterday, nor will I be the same tomorrow, but Jesus is unchanging. The Planck constant may be immutable, and it may be the standard by which the kilogram is measured, but Jesus Christ is immutable with capital letters. And it may be the standard by which the kilogram is measured, but Jesus Christ is the standard for human life. Jesus is the person who gives immutability meaning. You might call him Christ the Constant. But the text also involves some other important statements, like, let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. Remember those who are in prison. Let marriage be held in honor among all. Let the marriage bed be undefiled. Keep your lives free from the love of money. Be content with what you have. Remember your leaders and imitate their faith. Do not neglect to do good and to share what you have. These commands are constant in our faith. Most Christians would likely agree that at least in principle, that those statements refer to the practice of our faith, are not intended to be up for a vote at the congregational meeting. They're meant to be unchanging in our lives. But as to whether or not every scriptural instruction is intended to be unchangeable, we may get a hint of an answer by way of the Revised Common Lectionary, which cuts out the verses from today. In Hebrews 13, I didn't read verses 9 to 14. The lectionary skips over those verses for clarity, or to keep the passage a reasonable length for reading and worship, and not to put you asleep with a long list of things that we're supposed to observe. But verses 9 to 14, however, are about rituals and blood sacrifices, not something we've done in a Presbyterian church recently. Issues that were important to the first century church, by omitting these verses, the lectionary seems to be saying that the content of those verses belong to a long list of unchangeable practices for back then, but not for us. That leaves, of course, the standards and measurements that are included in today's pericope. Maintaining those standards of constance will help us to live our lives in a right and holy way, in ways that enhance and improve our quality of life. Not having to worry about blood sacrifice and observe the rules about that frees us to worry about the things we are called to sacrifice. What are some of those? Selfishness, greed, speaking ill of others, setting up people for failure. You can imagine the list, and I'll let that be to your good thinking. Still, if spiritual growth means anything, it has to refer to more than just adhering to a list of best practices. Sometimes we fail to do that. We don't internalize the practices to the degree that we will spontaneously live by the Spirit in matters that are on that list and in other matters. It's especially true regarding the first two instructions on that list. Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. One good church fight can prove that we don't understand those two at all. And that has happened, even in the Presbyterian Church. One of the most successful churches in Lehigh Presbytery was the sister church to the one that I started my ministry at, the church in Bethlehem. They had over 40 acres of ground gifted to them and had a huge facility. They had a church fight. It started about 10 years ago. Of 4,000 members of that church, 200 remain today in that building with that church's name because they were the ones who remained consistent. The others went off, found other property. Church fights are ugly, very ugly. And we are called as a body of people to be concerned about the mutuality of love. Dots and tittles about doctrine is nothing compared to our ability to love and support each other. Now, I'm not talking about taking in everybody off the street and giving them a place to sleep in your own house. But that needs to be the foundation of who we are. The biblical commentators point out that these first two instructions cover the relationships in two directions. The writer of Hebrews likely intended the first mutual love to define our attitude and behaviors towards each other in the community of faith, but the second has to do with our hospitality, the way we show love and define it by our attitude and our behavior to those who are beyond our community of faith. Essential parts of who we are. Both of these are challenging work, and neither of them is necessarily easy. But the focus here is on the first, the difficulty of mutual love towards those with whom we worship, and the bitter partisanship of church fights and large plenary meetings, that's at presbyteries and synods and on. There can be some really nasty fights going on. Deciding what should be unchangeable and what can move with the culture and new information can make for a lot of discomfort in the life of the church. This congregation is not who it was 40 years ago. Does that mean we're not valid as a congregation because we're not stuck in the way we did it four decades ago? Of course not. And deciding what we can change can lead to a lot of, I would say, haggling, but that's probably not a good term. But a lot of discussion, a lot of, are we really looking forward? Are we being true to our past? Lots of questions, and I get that. So what are we left with? Following the United Methodist Church General Conference earlier this year, William Willimon, a retired Methodist bishop, who now teaches the practice of Christian ministry at Duke Divinity, wrote, "The question of the LGBT clergy and same-sex marriages and the insolubility at corporate-style global gatherings of 800 people is more or less resolved by every congregation I know. The solution may not be one which I approve, but in a way, somehow it works in the present moment that congregations in the place where Christ assembled them muddle through life. They may still have great differences. They may have lost members because of their solution. There may be repeated and heated arguments. A pastor may be uneasy with how and why and the methods to lead their congregations in this process. But they have practiced forbearance as Jesus has told them. They will start to discover a way. They have discovered the adventure of worshiping in a Trinity with people with whom they disagree. Because, like it or not, those are the folks whom God has convened and made Methodist, and they muddle through." Friends, we can say the same thing about being Presbyterian. We muddle through. Each of us in our own way being faithful to the call that God has laid on us and inviting our brothers and sisters to join us in that journey. But not everybody will go exactly the same way. Just like in a family, it's not necessary that the family all do the same trade or go in the same way. We can still love and nurture each other. And every once in a while, I find out that I need some advice from a cousin whose lifestyle is extremely different from mine just because it is. He knows more about Mack trucks than I'll ever understand. Not that I drive a Mack truck much. But it is that idea that we are different from each other, and yet we are asked to hold each other in mutual love and esteem. And sometimes that gets difficult, because it's so much easier if we could all see the world exactly the same way. There is a constant in church. The business of being a church is never a simple matter, and disagreements over how to apply biblical principles are inevitable given our human nature. It's the same thing with the business of being a church is a vital endeavor. The church is a constant to our world, and it will prevail. So when the writer of Hebrews said, "Let mutual love continue," he is stating a timeless admonition that helps us as we muddle through, as the church continues to do its work in the world. We are followers of Jesus Christ in company with others who may not agree with us on every application of faith. And mutual love should remain as a force, even if the time comes that our disagreements are so strong that denominations decide to split. Mutual love is a command. Mutual love is a constant. And there exists another constant, the church, whose head in turn is another constant, Jesus Christ, the same, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. This knowledge will help us, this constancy of Christ, when we are muddling through in our personal lives, in our corporate lives. This will help us. He is constant, and he commands, let mutual love continue. Mutual love is the ability to say, I don't agree with you, but sit down here and let's have lunch together. And make the conversation not about our disagreements, but about our similarities. We're about to launch into a new church year. This is the last worship of summer. We will be challenged in the coming months to define who we are, not who we think we are, not who we would like to be, but who are we really as a congregation? And what sort of person do we want to invite to go the next leg of the journey with us? Let mutual love continue. If you've got to get a tattoo, I recommend that one. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Amen.